So tonight I'm going to talk about enthusiasm. And the occasion of this talk is that this coming Sunday in the Christian calendar is the Feast of Pentecost. Now, according to the Christian story, Jesus ascended into heaven after his resurrection. And after that, the disciples were meeting in secrecy. And then apparently one evening when they were there, 50 days after the resurrection on Pentecost, the Holy Spirit descended on them. And suddenly they were filled with confidence and they started going out and preaching the gospel to everyone. And so it was the first time that the Christian message went public, as it were. And so Christians really regard Pentecost as the birthday of the church. And I thought about enthusiasm, first of all, because the apostles got very enthusiastic as a result of Pentecost. But the Greek word enthusiasm means to have a God occupy you, for a God to enter you and the energy of a God to occupy you. That's the etymological meaning of the word. And to talk about enthusiasm, I want to distinguish it from excitement. A lot of people use those two terms almost interchangeably. Excitement, among other things, is a brain state. Excitement is a revved up state, a state where the sympathetic nervous system is activated in a natural way. We human beings feel excited when we're anticipating something pleasurable or something that we like is about to happen. So it's associated with the pleasure center of the brain. You know, if you're hungry and a good meal is coming, you know, there might be some excitement in that. A vacation or a fun day coming up might be exciting. Certainly, a new romance might be exciting. And how can I say? Excitement, I would say, I'd use the analogy of chocolate, you know. A little bit of chocolate now and again, perfectly fine. But if I'm eating pounds and pounds of chocolate every day, that's a problem, you know. And there are many people that, you know, not satisfied with just the occasional excitements that life might give, manufacture excitement for themselves. And certainly playing video games or watching action movies is a way to get a lot of excitement. You know, roller coaster rides, this sort of thing, even extreme sports. There are some people who are excitement junkies and just pursue as much excitement as possible in their lives. And the trouble with this is that excitement runs on the sympathetic nervous system. The sympathetic nervous system, the rev us up nervous system, is the same system on which runs the fight or flight response as well as stress. And so if I'm living a life where I'm constantly manufacturing a lot of excitement, in a way I'm practicing having stress. A life high in excitement is almost necessarily going to be a life high in stress. And I think something that's really sad is I think there are some people that confuse excitement for happiness. And happiness is something very, very different from excitement. And so I want to distinguish excitement from enthusiasm. And certainly there is an understanding of the word enthusiasm where it's close to excitement. It's sort of a revved up, you know, kind of excited kind of enthusiasm. And I want to look at another aspect. In particular, enthusiasm is one of the paramitas, one of the perfections of the Buddha. In Mahayana Buddhism, there are six paramitas: generosity, discipline, patience, enthusiasm, concentration, and insight. And the paramita virya, often translated as enthusiasm. That's not an excited energy. It's something very different. It's a much calmer energy, almost a calm, quiet excitement, an excitement that comes, an enthusiasm that comes from a very calm place. And to talk about that, I want to quote something from the Tao Te Ching. This is on the quote sheet. So the Tao Te Ching, talking about the sage, says, "Who else could quietly and gradually evolve from the muddy to the clear? Who else slowly but steadily could move from the inert to the living?" And this whole idea that the sage, first of all, is able to, when things are muddy, they're able to remain so still that everything settles and they become clear. And then from that place of clearness and stillness, they're able to generate this kind of quiet enthusiasm, which acts as an engine that drives them into action. And so this quiet enthusiasm is certainly one of the things that can drive our actions. And it's actually a very good question, you know, what does drive our actions most of the time? You know, it's a really good reflection. What drives us as we walk through the world, you know? Is it fear? Is it, you know, wanting to be in control of things? Is it, you know, like what are the drivers of our action? And, you know, it's probably different in different situations, but that's always an interesting question. This kind of quiet, centered enthusiasm is one possible driver. And in fact, if I'm in a more centered place, I'm more likely to be driven by that than by, you know, any one of a number of other neurotic impulses. And so how can we cultivate this kind of quiet enthusiasm? Ironically, one of the ways has to do with working on our attention. I often say that one of the foundational insights of Buddhism is the insight that there's this profound link between our ability to pay attention and our happiness. You know, and I think that is something that is largely lost on many Americans. I'd say we live in a world in which there's a great scarcity mentality about attention. Like, you know, the conversation about attention is usually at this bare minimum, you know, is someone paying attention or not? You know, it's just the binary. Is, you know, attention or no attention? The more we work with attention, the more we realize there are actually levels of attention. There are, as it were, qualities of attention or flavors of attention. And the more keenly we pay attention to the world, the more radiant an experience we have of the world is. It's almost as if when I'm not paying very close attention, you know, it's almost like the world goes away, like it, you know, picks up its marbles and goes home or something like this. But then the more I can actually pay attention and pay very close attention to everything around me, the more the world becomes miraculous in a way. And this is actually part of the magic of mindfulness practice. Mindfulness practice is just paying attention. Of course, the logical mind says, well, what's the value of that? But as we cultivate the value, as we cultivate our attention, the world becomes that much more radiant and miraculous. And there's a natural enthusiasm in that. There's a natural enthusiasm in seeing the world vital. The vital world that we experience when our attention has that vital quality. And so that's certainly one aspect of the paramita of enthusiasm. Another aspect has to do with love, you know, Because just think about it. We're, you know, the people that we care about, we're naturally kind of enthusiastic about them. We naturally want to help them, want to take care of them. Something's wrong, we want to fix it for them. You know, it's like there's a natural enthusiasm that is part of love, you know. And many of the religious traditions, you know, Buddhism as well as Christianity, you know, in a way, what they're encouraging is by widening that circle of love, we're widening that circle of enthusiasm for helping others. You know, because we feel that much more compassion toward others, then we can carry that much more enthusiasm, even for helping, say, a perfect stranger, that sort of thing. Now, of course, you know, the joy and the love, you know, and the careful attention, you know, we can pay that to our work, the external world. We can also pay that kind of careful attention to ourselves. We can be mindful of ourselves. And just as when we pay careful attention to the outside world becomes more alive. When we pay attention to the inside world becomes more alive, more vivid. It becomes more of an active conversation. It was really Jung who made us all quite aware that the otherness of the internal world is just as real as the otherness that we encounter in the external world, you know. And so there's this possibility with tremendous attention and with tremendous love to generate this enthusiasm across otherness. Ultimately, I would say the greatest enthusiasm comes from loving life, from saying yes to life, which is hard, you know, because we're so programmed with our mammalian brains to want to move toward pleasure and enjoyable things and to want to move away from painful things and yucky things, you know. And of course, the first noble truth of Buddhism, life is dukkha. And I find that three-word statement of the first noble truth a little bit unsatisfying, and especially when the word dukkha is poorly translated as suffering. It sounds like the first noble truth is saying life is suffering. And it makes it sound like Buddhism is nihilistic and life-denying, which is the exact opposite of what is the case. Dukkha is a technical term in Buddhism. It's the technical term referring to the fact that I am dissatisfied. I am permanently dissatisfied with the fact that I want all the good things in life. I want all the pleasure. I want to get rid of all the pain and all the bad things. But I can't. That pleasure and pain are always wrapped up with each other intimately, and there's no way to separate. You know, it's, you know, the very thing that I like necessarily involves the thing that I don't like also. And so dukkha is the unsatisfactoriness of that situation, and dukkha is also all the conditioned mind tricks that I do, all the endless strategies I try to separate the things that I like from the things that I don't like. And so I prefer a statement of the first noble truth that's something more along the lines of ordinary conditioned mind is dukkha, and dukkha is what prevents us from experiencing the richness of life itself. Because the richness of life itself is only experienced in the yes to everything that is. You know, that kind of enthusiastic yes to everything that is, and it's wonderful, and it's miracle, and parts of it hurt, you know, but there is a kind of magic to saying yes to it all. So at this point, I'll share the quote sheet. of the quote from the Tao Te Ching at the top. From Confucius, we get a very ethical quote. When you're laboring for others, let it be with the same zeal as if it were for yourself. And along a similar lines from John Wesley, do all the good you can in all the ways you can, to all the souls you can, in every place you can, at all the times you can, with all the zeal you can, as long as you ever can. The mystic William Blake said, for everything that lives is holy. Life delights in life. Coleridge said, nothing is so contagious as enthusiasm. Washington Irving said, there is an eloquence in true enthusiasm that is not to be doubted. Turns out the transcendentalists have a lot to say on this topic. Emerson said, enthusiasm is the mother of effort, and without it, nothing great was ever achieved. Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr., the father of the great Supreme Court justice, said, it's faith in something and enthusiasm for something that makes life worth living. Thoreau said, enthusiasm is supernatural serenity, speaking very much to that quiet, centered kind of enthusiasm. Whitman said, to me, every hour of the day and night is an unspeakably perfect miracle. Charles Buxton said, experience shows that success is due less to ability than to zeal. James Whitcomb Riley said, the most essential factor is perseverance, the determination never to allow your energy or enthusiasm to be dampened by the discouragement that must inevitably come. Henry Ford said, enthusiasm is the yeast that makes your hope shine to the stars. Enthusiasm is the sparkle in your eyes, the swing in your gait, the grip of your hand, the irresistible surge of will and energy to execute your ideas. Churchill said, success consists of going from failure to failure without the loss of enthusiasm. Motivational writer Dale Carnegie said, today is life, the only life you're sure of. Make the most of today. Get interested in something. Shake yourself awake. Develop a hobby. Let the winds of enthusiasm sweep through you. Live today with gusto. And the Reverend Norman Vincent Peale says, if you have zest and enthusiasm, you attract zest and enthusiasm. Life does give back in kind. Photographer Gordon Parks said, enthusiasm is the electricity of life. How do you get it? You act enthusiastic until you make it a habit. The sports announcer Howard Cosell said, then there is still a higher type of courage, the courage to brave pain, to live with it, to never let others know of it, and to still find joy in life, to wake up in the morning with an enthusiasm for the day ahead. Zig Ziglar says, people often say that motivation doesn't last. Well, neither does bathing. That's why we recommend it daily. Paul Meyer says, enthusiasm glows, radiates, and permeates, and immediately captures everyone's interest. Joel Osteen says, one of the main reasons we lose our enthusiasm in life is because we become ungrateful. We let what was once a miracle become common to us. We get so accustomed to goodness that it becomes a routine. And it really is true. If enthusiasm has one enemy, it is taking things for granted that are really wonderful in life. Akarok Brust says, success is built in love, passion, and enthusiasm. It is brought to fruition through consistency, routine, and good habits. Lila Gifty Akita says, the possibility of the dream gives strength. And it's interesting to ask yourself, what dream are you following in life? Are you following a dream in life? You know, are you letting yourself have a dream to follow? Amit Kalahantri says, sometimes imagination outsmarts intelligence and enthusiasm outshines experience. Mishi McCoy says, I would rather drown in the depths of love than splash around on the shores of complacency. Asuna Ladyzeal said, the first inclination of this generation is to talk about anything and everything, at any time in any way. But the problem is, talk is a sham when it is from the person who knows not much and to whom talk is a pastime. No, stay silent, dream big, dare, take risks, talk, think, love. That's the definition of my zeal and the definition of greatness. And finally, a beautiful African saying, those who love you are not fooled by your mistakes, by the mistakes you have made, or the dark image you hold about yourself. They remember your beauty when you feel ugly, your wholeness when you are broken, your innocence when you feel guilty, and your purpose when you are confused. That's a beautiful statement of the way that love gives us enthusiasm for others.